exactly the truth. Wow, it's wonderful to have music that supports our teaching, that supports what it is that we believe. So thank you, thank you. We're in a new month, and the theme for the whole month is living in the light. And sometimes you wonder, well, what does that mean, living in the light? And I'm going to share with you what I think it means. It definitely always means wisdom, but it's more than that. It's more than that, that it is that we use the word enlightenment when people know the truth about themselves, when they awaken to their spiritual magnificence. We say they are enlightened. We saw, if you look at the story of the Buddha, he was enlightened when he discovered that the middle path was the way of transformation, of the way of life. Anyway, and today's specific topic is the summer of winter. And I'm telling you, and it's one page in our journal. I read that page, I mentioned 25 times. I couldn't get it. I was like, what is this? What does this really mean? How can I talk about this for 20 minutes? So, of course, I asked myself all those things, and let me tell you what they thought, what I think they were trying to get at. They started out by saying, this is the time that you should put aside your gifts and tithes so that the harvest will be good. You put the seeds aside, you give your gifts so that you have more abundance. But then they went on to say that in the winter, the roots continue to grow. I'm from Saskatchewan, Canada. I didn't think that was true. I thought if it was frozen winter, nothing's growing. It's just in hibernation like the bear. But, so I did some research. And actually, as long as the temperature of the soil is at least 40 degrees, 32 to 40 degrees, the roots are growing, even though the rest of the tree isn't growing. They're deepening. They're searching for water and nutrients. And so what's that got to do with us? Well, what happens in the spring, because that tree has searched for it, has deeper roots, because it searched for those nutrients, it bursts forth in the spring with great blossoms and new branches and new growth. And that wouldn't have happened so riotously if it hadn't been deepening during the winter. Well, now that I've used the word deepening, you already know what that means to you, don't you? Deepening means to deepen our connection with source, to deepen our awareness of the love inside us, to deepen not only our understanding, but our awareness of that presence, of that greatness that God is. And we do that deepening through our spiritual practice. In the journal, it suggests that you should get quiet, and you should deepen in the quiet of winter. And that's a lovely thing, but we sort of don't really have that kind of quiet of winter that I grew up with as the snow was softly falling all around. But we can still take time to get quiet. Take time to connect. Take time to deepen the realization. Dr. Ernest Holmes, in talking about affirmative prayer, or as he calls it, spiritual mind treatment, talks about the light. And I just want to read you the one sentence that I thought was really important for us. He was taught, this is a part of the textbook that is all about the light. There were several paragraphs, but I just chose this one sentence, which says this: the mind unified with God. Okay, so that's when you're in prayer, that's what you've done. The mind unifying with God is a pathway of light. So, and that's why if you've really done those first two stages of prayer deeply and powerfully, you really don't need to do anything else. Because the mind unified with God is the pathway of light. So you just then simply do whatever you're doing. Do it guided by that light that is within you. It's your essence. It is who you are and what you are. So prayer is one of the ways. Meditation is another way. And Walsh and Tove is a, Hasidic, magical rabbi who taught wonderfully beautiful stories to inspire people. And I'd like to tell one of his stories, because this one I think is really important for us. He always starts all these stories that he and his followers get into a carriage and they draw the curtain so no one can see where they're going. But they get to this place that's outside a teeny little village, and it's a very small, decrepit farm. There lives the farmer and his wife and four daughters. They have no money and they only have one cow. And the family is very devout, they're very thankful, and very humble. And yesterday we heard Judith Orloff tell us that humility is a spiritual practice, but there can sometimes be too much humility, which you'll see by the means of this story. So the Baal Shem Tov came to this farmer's house, and of course the farmer had said to his followers, no matter what I do, you may not ask me any questions. And because they loved him so much, they were willing to agree. So we went into the farmer's house, and they said they were hungry. The Baal Shem Tov said he was hungry. So the farmer said, wife, we must feed this, our visitor. To have a guest is an honor. Let's feed our visitor. She said, well, husband, then if we kill the cow, we won't have any milk for the children. He said, you must kill the cow. Kill the cow. Made this wonderful, great amount of roast beef. And the Baal Shem Tov spent all night eating that cow. Ate the whole thing.
Oh.
Ate the whole thing. And his disciples looked at him in horror. They couldn't believe he was taking away this family's good. And then he said the next day was going to be the Sabbath. And for Sabbath he wanted 10 loaves of bread, two vegetable dishes, two meat dishes, 10 desserts, and 3 different wines. Well, the farmer knew he couldn't possibly do this, but he knew he needed to honor this being. So he went and sold his farm and got agreement that he wouldn't have to move out until Monday. So he had the Sabbath and Sunday. And so he sold his farm, he bought all the things, they made this wonderful meal. And again, the disciples couldn't even swallow a bit because they're thinking this poor family is starving and here we're eating all of this stuff. And he eats and eats and eats, all night long he eats. And his disciples really want to ask him what he's doing. Has he lost his mind? Has he gone crazy? Anyway, he finished his meal and he got up and even without a thank you, got into the carriage, brought his followers into the carriage with him. He said, by the way, I'm a Baal Shem Tov, and you will get whatever you ask for. It is my blessing to you. So the farmer went out into the forest after that, and he was beside himself. He had no money. He had not only no money, but he had 4 daughters, and they all needed dowries, or they wouldn't be able to get married, and so on. He was just beside himself. He went into the forest, and he remembered what the Baal Shem Tov said to him, that he needed to ask whatever he asked for. So he said, okay, I'm asking for enough money that I can support, and I can have a new house, and I can give my wife and my children new clothes, and there'll be enough money for a dowry for my 4 daughters, and that there'll be enough left over. He said, Lord, this is the first time I've asked you for anything, but I ask you for these things. And he broke down in tears, absolutely beside himself with grief that he had nothing, that everything was gone. And along came the village drunkard. And the village drunkard said, I see you crying. I'm so sorry you're crying. You're the one person in the whole village that's kind to me. And he wasn't well. He said, when I die, I want you to have my fortune. I've hidden it here in the woods, and I'll show you where it is. So hand and showed him where it was. And sure enough, the next day, the drunkard died. So the farmer went to look in the forest, and there was this box filled with gold coins. It's worth so much money that he could do all the things that he asked God for. He could have a dowry for each of his daughters. He could have clothes. He could have bought himself a new house better than the mayor's house. Wonderful, wonderful gift that he had given himself just by being kind. And a whole year passed, and then he and his wife took a visit to where the Balsham Tove was. And the disciples saw him and said, "Master, you've got a guest." And the Balsham Tove recognized him immediately. He said, "Tell me about your life in the last year." And the farmer said, "It's just been so wonderful. It was like a small miracle. Everything that I asked for came to me." And the Balsham Tove said, "Yes, of course, because you finally asked. I had to eat you out of house and home for you to even ask for your good. It was your destiny to be a rich man, but you were keeping it away from yourself." Okay. Isn't that a great story?
Yes.
Because that's how we keep our good, no matter whether it's financial good, relationship good, health good. We keep it away from ourselves because we don't ask. We do not claim our good. We don't go to that inner sanctuary and accept that this is for me. This is for me. This good is for me. And we can. And we should. We should. So prayer, meditation. When you plant the seeds from the prayer, when you plant the seeds from the prayer, then be willing to do the next thing. Notice the reason that the drunkard gave him his fortune was because he had been kind to him. He hadn't ridiculed him like the rest of the villagers. He had been kind, just like your son. He was willing to listen and hear and see the other man's truth, even though it didn't look like good. Can we do that? You know, 299 of the textbook. The God of love cannot hear the prayer of the one who fails to love. So you first cleanse your heart so you are just love. Yesterday we had such an amazing day. Hands up how many of you were here. Yeah, it was fabulous. There were probably, I'm guessing 70, I didn't count, but there was a lot of people, and we got so much. Judith Orloff is a psychiatrist, so as she said, 14 years of study past high school, 14 years to become a psychiatrist, first of all an MD, then a psychiatrist. And she said in all that time, she always had the gift of, as she called it with us, the gift of deep intuition, which is really a gift of psychic knowing. It was really wonderful to watch her yesterday because she would look at someone and she'd just get them. She'd just get them. She got their heart. She got their mind. She just got everybody because she's willing not just to use her knowledge, but also her heart. Both hand is what we want to use in our meditation to listen to that voice for love, and in our prayers to ask for what our heart's desires are. You know, we have a principle here that we teach, that we believe, that is infallible, it's impeccable in the way it works. But first of all, we have to embody the idea as if it was already so. We have to embody it as if this is natural for me. It's natural for me to be in relationship. It's natural for me to be creative. It's natural for me to have all of my gifts of creativity displayed. It's natural for me to be healthy and vital, not dependent on anything. Age is not a factor. Education is not a factor. There is She too finally was approved for ordination. It was a very glorious, wonderful experience in the center in San Diego where she served. And she and I caught up with each other and had some time to catch up and to see what's going on for us. This is a woman who has been in service ever since I knew her. I don't know if any of you know what a Job's Daughters is. It's a group. And she served as a leader of Job's Daughters probably for as long as Kirsten served as a team leader. Maybe even longer. Because when I met her 14 or 16 or 18 years ago, she'd already been working with these girls for 18 years. It was her path to give. And now she's in service by caring for one of the elderly congregants of the First Center I've served in. It's a path of service, and sometimes that path of service is bursting forth with those summer blooms, and sometimes it's dark like winter. And we have to trust that by deepening our connection with Source, all good will come. I don't know if you've heard the happy news, but let me be the first to tell you. All five suites of ours upstairs have been rented. That is a really wonderful demonstration. All of our practitioners and our board of trustees, who are mostly practitioners, have been praying for this for several months. And you know, here's the thing about prayer. It's always answered. We had an opportunity to rent all five. It would have been very unhappy for us because it was the wrong person, the wrong group. Mm-hmm. This is the right person. And meanwhile, what no one else can see is there's activity happening, just like in your subjective mind. You can't see it, but there's stuff going on. If you plant a seed, there's stuff drawing to itself everything you need for that seed to burst forth as a blossom. So there were people coming, there were people going, there were people exchanging offices, but now it's complete, and we're very grateful, so very, very grateful for all of your prayers. And I know many of you asked friends and told people about it, and I'm grateful for that. This is like a spiritual family, and we actually picked each other. We didn't get to pick your biological family. Many of us have really great biological families, and that's wonderful. But we got to pick our spiritual family. And I'm so happy that you picked this one, and that you are continuing to be here in service and in love and demonstrating the principle, the law of mind. When you, so how we can take the Walsham Tove story to heart. When you think you can't go any further, when you think that this looks like the end, this looks like it's impossible, you just need to keep praying. You just need to keep praying and knowing that the good that you desire is already yours. Judith Orloff also taught us yesterday that we can't have that unless we're willing to surrender what is unlike our needs. So, very easy to conceive. Sometimes it's difficult to practice because we get in our own way. So get out of your way. Get out of your own way. Allow that good to fill your life, to fill your heart, to fill your mind. And so it is. Many of us are holding on to things that don't serve us any longer. And so I'm going to include in this prayer the practice of all of the spiritual tools that we know, including surrender. And this eternity. It is the highest and holiest, the deepest unconditional and unconditional love. And the most amazing thing is it's everywhere present. It's in every one of us as us. It's our essence. I speak this word in the first person for each one to accept if he or she is precious. This is what I know for me. I know that I am one with that power. And that power is not the love of power, it's the power of love. And so I love more greatly. I open my heart in a greater way than ever before. I allow that goodness of God to spill out into everything I do, to bless everything that I touch. I know for my physical well-being that I am whole, I am complete, I am perfect. I am wrapped in the wisdom, the wholeness of God, and the wholeness of God expresses through me as life. I know that I am that prosperity, that abundance that simply gives of itself, receives greater and greater good, and shares so effortlessly. And I know that I am a creative expression of that one. And my creativity is a blessing, not only to myself, but to the world, to everyone around me, and to everyone everywhere. I know that my consciousness raises me up. In that raising up, each one that I know, each one that I touch, each one in my sphere of influence is raised up. It is good, it is great, and it is so. And please help me anchor this in gratitude by saying with me,
and so it is.